Welcome to the Real Estate Trainer Podcast with your host, Brian Eisenhower. This podcast is brought to you by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. ICC provides customized and structured coaching and training programs for real estate agents and team leaders, representing many of the top producing agents in North America. ICC also offers broker and owner consulting on agents recruiting, training, and retention. For more info, visit EisenhowerCoaching.com or find us on Facebook.
We're going to go over how to structure a winning offer and how to avoid being the target offer to beat. In other words, so you don't put in an offer and then everybody kind of goes after that offer and you just become the sucker offer that drives all the other offers up and then you ultimately don't get the deal. So what I think we should do right now, and when we talk about how to write an offer that gets accepted, what are some tips you guys use?
Shorten contingencies, or in some cases, remove contingencies.
Okay. So give me an example of what shortened contingencies looks like.
If we're going to do a home inspection 5 days, 3 days. Okay. Make sure that if you do that, you have an inspector that's willing to jump at that.
Yep.
Waiving appraisals. You know, we've seen some of those. We've seen some of those come in. That was really good. In some cases, no contingencies.
Yeah, good. No, I like that. And a lot of people, Walter, a lot of people like have a hard time with that. It's like, well, I don't want to waive my appraisal. I'm waiving my client's right. What are you talking about? It's not your right. It's your client's right. That's their decision. So you need to make sure that they understand that's their decision. You're not doing your due diligence as an agent if you're not explaining that option in writing this offer to your client. Now, you should also disclose that if the house doesn't appraise, they're going to be on the hook for making up the difference. But it's ultimately their decision how they want to write that offer. And if you write 5 or 6 offers that don't get accepted, boy, I'd certainly think about disclosing this strategy to them.
We've actually done that a lot with like beach homes or homes with a view because they're willing to pay over and above. We've done that for years, even during regular times. People right. will pay an extra, you know, $5,000, $20,000 for on the sand or with the view of the ocean. So now we're just doing it inland instead.
Right. That, I love that, because that, I'll tell you right now, that is probably going to be, if you look at the differences, how certain agents get their offers accepted and certain ones don't, they're getting very aggressive. And it's not just based on price. They're tying down all their contingency times. They're removing their contingencies right off the bat, which, so long as our clients are very clear on what that means and hear that that's reasonably normal. In fact, every one of you can now go back to your clients and say that you were in an office meeting for your entire office where you were being advised by the trainer to start writing offers, removing those contingencies because of how heated this market is. And that's a script you can genuinely use right now. Because that's what we're doing. To get your offers accepted in this market, we're going to have to shorten contingencies and waive them right up front to some degree. But writing offers in, you know, where you put 17 days to remove contingencies and you just come in at, you know, normal asking price or even a few thousand above asking, usually is not going to get it done in this market. You're going to need to be more aggressive than that. Philip.
The share to be really buttoned up with our loan officer partner, knowing that outside of appraisal not being met and the client, you know, potentially losing their job, we could go in 100% zero loan contingency, right? I mean, if they're a frontline worker or they're in a type of work that they're pretty insulated from what's going on, then we can explain to them at the very outset that, hey, we're going to go in with a few contingencies that we normally would have, we won't have. Loan contingency being one, possibly appraisal. And I'm one of the most recent deals we got accepted, I spoke with the listing agent from the assumption that they were going to take our offer and said, look, I know a lot of us are going to submit offers with no appraisal contingency. In order to best advise my client, what are some of the improvements that your clients have made to the home with a value to add to it? So that when the appraisal comes, I'm ready. I've got all this lined up, ready to go. And he actually took our offer $5,000 less than someone else's offer simply because of that communication. And on top of it, you know, in the middle of the repairs, we got termite. You know, go figure. So that it was one of those things where I'm already calling the elephants in the room. I'm letting them know, hey, I'm encouraging my clients to buy this house as is. anything that could be covered by a home warranty, we're not going to ask for. And outside of there being some significant termite damage or foundation damage, you know what, we'll push to get this home through with very minimal problems or complications. So that way the listing agent on the other side is like, wow, I got a team player. I've got someone who's fighting for their client, but it will also fight for my client. And I try and make it seem as easy as it can be. And it really is. It's not, you know, nothing hard. Loan officers communicating on email and text messaging the listing agent. We're just trying to create those connections to where they either tell us, hey, these are the better offers, can you match it? Or they're flat out taking our offer like the most recent one did. So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, I like that.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
That's a great idea because I've not done that, but we had one where we accepted an offer where they actually excluded, you know, waived all the contingencies for inspections. Can you do, what are your thoughts about doing an addendum that says, you know, inspection contingencies waived with the exception of foundation, heater, you know, something major, that type of thing, and just spell that out. Is that good? Not good? What
are you asking me, Walter?
Yeah. Or in general, I don't know. I liked what he just said. And I got thinking, gosh, that's a great, they included with the written RPA to, you know, sit there and say, all things considering, we waive our inspection rights, but we still want to be look at foundation or look at roof or, you know, but not the piddly stuff, that type of thing.
I don't know. To me, instead of doing that, I think I would probably keep the inspections in, but I would say that I'm buying it as is so that I have the right to back out if I find a structural issue, and I would tighten up the timeframes. That's just me. Like I'd say inspections to be performed within 5 days of acceptance, but it'll be as is, you know what I'm saying? So we're buying it as is, we're not gonna ask for repairs, and that is what it is, but I'll get in and out to make sure that we're good with it in 5 days. That's how I would probably do it, as opposed to like saying, hey, I'm gonna inspect it anyway, but we wanna reserve the right for the foundational structural stuff. I don't know, I could see it working both ways.
I understand as is disclosed and as is discovered, right? So. Right. If they're not disclosing anything to us and then we get the disclosures and then they're telling us, oh my gosh, hey, we've had these problems with the plumbing and everything else, that kind of changes our understanding of the property. Or when we send someone in to inspect and go underneath the house or into the attics and we find, you know, missing piers and missing beams, and you know, that's something we gotta work out. And I've always told the other agent, like, well, you know, now you have a physical report, you have to disclose this, or at least your seller has to disclose this to the next person. You know, do you want to go through this dance again, or, you know, what's the over under us getting a deal done? You know, depending on the personality, some people are pretty upfront about it. Others, you know, they just need all the data, all the emailing and texting and all that stuff. But we've been able to work deals that way too.
I agree. No, and I think as is, I mean, it's implied with as is that you're just going to take it or leave it. However, like you said, Philip, I mean, if you play the videotape through, you're going to be going through this with somebody else real soon anyway. So I might as well just do it now and sort it. So yeah, no, I get that. I like that. What else are you guys doing to make sure your offers get accepted? Anybody else got anything special out there that we're throwing out there?
I think that the biggest part of the complication of this process, I mean, most of my clients are willing to waive all of their inspection, appraisal contingency, loan contingency. I mean, they're gonna take the property as is. They know there's like 9 other offers on the table. They know what they're getting themselves into. I think the challenge that I'm having is that the other agent, the listing agent, isn't telling us what we're competing against. Mm-hmm. Like that we have no, you know, so I know that properties are typically going, you know, we have to write 30K, 50K over the asking price. There's nothing of an example for that, but we have to advise them to do something like that when we have 9 offers on the table.
That's a great point, Melissa. That's a great point.
Yeah, we
should
still
know. Should the listing agent, this is kind of an aside, but should the listing agent, I mean, I would think that if I'm the listing agent and Melissa's putting an offer in, I'm trying... You know, I don't represent Melissa. Melissa has her own client. I represent my seller. I'm trying to get Melissa's offer up as high as humanly possible. So yeah. I'm going to do whatever I can to get her up there. So mm-hmm. I'm probably going to say, Melissa, you need to be at least 40 grand over.
We're not getting that. I mean, they're not giving us anything.
And I'm with you.
Yeah.
But I think for a listing agent, that's mm-hmm. how you do your client the best service.
Yeah.
because I'm driving you up. So now I'm really adhering to my fiduciary, to my seller, because I'm actually getting a real high price for him this way. I'm actually using you and the other offers to get all your offers up. And here you are, Melissa, saying, I want that, which is good. You know? So I'm with you. That's
Brian,
like, yeah, Jody.
You ask questions like, if we come in at this price, will we be in the running? Or if we come in with this, will we be in the running? Because a lot of agents think they can't give out information. They can, and they should, to help their seller. So we found that if you ask more pointed questions, specifics about what your buyer's wanting to do, and will we be in the running if we do this, they'll at least give you a clue. They may not give you details, but you'll know if you're in the ballpark.
Right. That's right. I like that. And you kind of start interrogating them a little bit. It's kind of a delicate dance, because you know how listing agents can be. They're kind of the top of the food chain in the real estate market right now. So, and they love to kind of treat you like it, but so you have to kind of do a delicate dance on asking those questions, but get them to commit to something, like Jody's saying, you know, saying something like, hey, you know, will this get me in the running? Do I need to be hired to get it? What do you think? You know, I'm really trying to get them to commit to me. And it does baffle me for the same reasons you're saying, Melissa. I do not know why they will not say those words to get me up higher for their client. I don't get it. I think they think they're breaching some sort of duty when it's exactly the opposite, but it is what it is, you know? So it's usually their own uncertainty that's got them being a little feisty about those types of things. So, but I think that's a very great point. And it brings me to another point about this too. I don't think I've heard you guys actually mention this before. What about escalation clauses? Anybody in here ever used one?
I was just looking at some information on that. And I know previously, because it's the scary thought of like, well, you know, is it going to go too high? So you could always even add in a cap in there, or even ask for the opportunity. Like, here's our, you know, offer, but we request the opportunity to beat the highest and best offer by, you know, $1,500 or whatever it may be, and just have the opportunity to counter back at $1,500 higher than that last one.
Right. That's been my experience with them. I've actually used them as a buyer before to get a property, to get an investment property, where it was, there we go. Candace put a good little link in there where you can read about escalation clauses, where, I mean, I see Tom, you said it locks in your top number. It doesn't necessarily have to. I think you want it to, though. Or it could. And what happens is it says, hey, I'll beat any offer that comes in, whatever their price is, I'll go up to this much higher than it. And you get to pick what that number is. 5,000 above it, 10, 20, whatever feasible in your area. And that's what the escalation costs. So it's almost like, here's a trump card on any other offer that comes in. We're throwing 5,000 on top of it. Does that make sense? So it's real strong. So if they sign that, then they've got to show you proof. The listing agent actually has to show proof of that other offer. If I remember correctly, you black out the names or something, so that you don't see the confidential information, but you do see the price and the date and the amount and all that kind of stuff, so that we have a viable bona fide offer that we're using as a benchmark that we can escalate off of. Does that sound right to you, Candace, based on what you just quickly read? I should have known Candace would be like Googling it on it.
So you're saying that when you do this escalation clause, that at the end, the listing agent has to actually show you.
Yeah, the other offer that we're using. Correct? I mean, that's the way I'm all.
Yeah, and that article goes over just that, as far as asking for the verification of proof for that highest and best offer that they did receive. So it's question number 6 on there. Just make sure you sign in to car.org, because it is obviously protected behind your membership there.
And that's an acceleration clause or exhalation clause?
Acceleration clause. Let me have this
from an acceleration clause.
Yes. No, escalation.
Oh, that's what I thought. I thought I heard someone say two different things. So, right. Okay, yeah. Got it.
I might have been the culprit that has said both of them. Me.
That's okay.
They both make sense to me.
Yeah.
So does that create a counter offer?
We're going to accelerate one way or another.
Yeah, Brittany, I saw you put in the notes there. You write this. Every single time you put in an escalation clause in every offer you're writing right now?
Almost everyone. I mean, if it's under 1.5 in our area, there's multiple offers, and we've got the three of my last buyers each got it because of that. But we put it in like 6,000 higher so that it's a good amount above where the other ones are.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. So to me, that's what we want to be thinking about, Tom. If you haven't written an escalation clause, do you see any negatives with them? Anybody have any negatives with them?
Yeah, I have a caveat about them. Okay. If you're the listing agent, you have to make sure that the person who's doing that can make up the difference on the appraisal. Because if it doesn't appraise, they can't suddenly say, oh, well, I'm out, you know. So if you're the listing agent, I would be real careful that they have agreed up ahead that if it doesn't appraise, that they will, they'll make up the difference.
Well, that goes back to the contract of, did they check the box for the appraisal?
Yeah, it goes back to that.
And is that a different addendum? Is that different paperwork? Is there another addendum or?
For the appraisal?
Yeah.
It's right there in your deposit receipt.
That's part of your RPA.
In your offer, yeah.
It's automatically checked, or I think by default, you can uncheck it.
Okay.
Or it's written subject to appraisal unless otherwise marked.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's from the buyer's side. But if you're a listing agent, which is more of what I do, you want to make sure that, you know, because anyone can say, I'll pay anything. And then if it doesn't appraise, say, oh, not me. And then you go to find the other four buyers that were once there and now they're gone.
Well, you have to have an addendum stating that if it doesn't appraise, I'm still purchasing the property.
Right.
That's what I was asking. Thank you.
Yeah. That's other terms and conditions or whatever.
You can always, everything's negotiable.
Yeah.
Yep. I like that. Good stuff.
I have a question, Brian.
Yes.
Okay, so it's Natalie. On the escalation clause, I remember in my continuing education book, they were saying that from the listing side, if you don't make it an even playing field and everybody being aware that that type of offer is being considered, that it is giving the one who's using it an unfair advantage over the others. So what kind of response does the listing agent have to be compliant with that? Do you throw that back out to everybody and say, okay, we are open to using an escalation clause and let everybody have a chance to counter with that? But I just remember that being in my materials, and I've only received one offer with it. And the seller did not accept it simply because it wasn't as good of an offer with other terms. So the price was kind of a non-issue for that particular seller. But that's the only time I received one here in Tulare County.
I'll tell you, I'm impressed that you're reading continuing education books. That in of itself is awesome. Boring, but awesome. I am not aware, and I cannot imagine that you would have to disclose any of the contents of any offer to the other people making the other offer.
You're correct. You do not. You can have 10 offers come in and take two of them and have them bid off against each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you don't have to, you know, nobody's entitled to anything.
No, you can negotiate and offer the information, but nobody's entitled to it.
But I
and of course,
want
if your
to.
Seller doesn't want you to, you may not.
Right. And yeah, you have to disclose it for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you
have to disclose. Yeah.
You have to disclose it to the seller, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
But you don't have to disclose it to the other buyer's agents making offers.
No.
No. And the
but
other
you might
deal
want to. You might want to.
You might want to.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. You might want to, but you got to be careful because sometimes you don't want them to go, I'm not getting in a war over this and walk off. It's
totally.
A very, very delicate balance, that this whole thing.
You don't want to be a hero and ruin your deal.
Yeah, you don't want to be a hero and ruin your deal.
That's correct.
But
yeah.
but I will also say that, you know, that's why it's so important to vet all of your offers that come in. And I know by the time I present my offer to a seller, I almost know what color underwear they're wearing. I mean, right. I'm almost creepy. I will Google them. I'll go on their Facebook. I will, you know, look at all the homes they've owned, how much they owe, you know, what company they work for, how healthy is their company, all that stuff I inspect, because that seller has to make an informed decision.
Yeah, Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. That's pretty cool. I'm deleting all my social media profiles right now.
Kind of creeped out. In case I creep around you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of creeped out.
Yeah, April might stalk you. You better be careful.
Well, I have pulled up in front of a, we've gone to go do an interview, and I'll say, Dennis, it's that house. How do you know? Well, that's the car he drives. How do you know that? Because I've investigated him.
I like the recon. That's a high level of recon. That's good.
Because I don't like my deals to fall out.
Yeah,
you know? I hate. And people, it's the pits, and multiple offers are rife with fallouts. Because people get very excited in the heat of the moment. And then after they get it, they go, oh, I did, kind of a thing. So
what do you do? Yeah. Like, hey, let's say I'm a listing agent and Tom writes me an offer with an escalation clause and there's like 15 other offers.
Yes.
Could I tell the other agents and say, hey man, I got an offer with an escalation clause. You got to get your offer up or get an escalation clause on your counter offer.
Well, I always discuss it with the seller first and say, right. You know, this is going to be our game plan. What do you think? And if he agrees to that, because you got to be careful. I don't want to knock people off because they don't want to compete, you know? Mm-hmm. So usually I'll say nothing until one guy will come to me, an agent who really wants it may come to me privately and call me and say, hey, you know, what's the deal? I'll say, well, you know, you better hustle it up. And so give me your best. Give me the best your guy can do, because it's, and sometimes, you know, this is where you really don't want to tick off other agents, because in situations like this, who your agent is very important. They need to trust you. They need to, if they know that you're an good agent that gets your deals done, that has weight. So this is why I always keep a very good relationship, best I can, with all the agents in my community, because that's the best thing you can do for representation of your buyers and sellers.
Oh boy, that right there is huge. I cannot say that one enough. I mean, it's been a long time since I've sold real estate, but when I did, you know, towards the end of that, I was a listing agent myself and I had a real estate team, and I remember 15 offers would come in, you know, let's say, and I would be like, okay, price, neat, terms, neat. Agent mattered so much to me, because I knew with that agent, they would do what they were going to say. They would perform. If something went wrong, they wouldn't go crazy. I wouldn't need to get a counselor for them or a psychologist. They weren't going to freak out. They weren't going to
for yourself.
Yeah. They could handle it. They've been there before.
It's huge.
Yeah. And so that was just safer for me. So therefore it was safer for my client.
All know each other. We know, you know, the ones that pull shenanigans and try to pull the price down in the inspection and that kind of thing. You know, if you have a rep for that kind of stuff, trust me, it follows you.
It does. And it will hurt your clients.
It will hurt your clients
in the future. Yeah. It'll hurt your clients in the future when you pull that stuff. So agreed. So you do want to be up and up. And I don't think anything we're talking about with escalation clauses, you will see it's unfamiliar territory to a lot of people, which is why we're talking about it now. So hopefully it's not unfamiliar to you, so that if you get an offer with an escalation clause or you're competing against an offer with an escalation clause, it's not shady. It's not unique even. I mean, we got people on here saying they write them with every single offer. I can tell you, I just wrote one. I was so frustrated. I was trying to buy some investment property and I just kept missing them. And I was out of state. And then I asked the agent, I go, why don't we do an escalation clause? I'm starting to get, you know, I'm a pretty patient dude. I've been around the block on this stuff a few times, but I'm starting to lose my patience. And sure enough, he's like, yeah, good idea. So we wrote it and we got it right off the bat, first try. Then I go back to think, man, those other offers that we missed out on, we should have written them with those too. And now I'm thinking, man, I should have gotten Brittany or April as my freaking agent.
Not me.
They would have done it. You know? So
not me. I don't like to do buyers.
Yeah, there, except for that. Except for that.
Well, you'd be better nice off with Brittany, trust me. Right.
So, but does that make sense? Like, that's kind of where we're at with that. Okay, so Betsy asked a question in there related to this. What is your feeling about a listing agent wanting an offer written before the buyer sees the property? So the listing agent wants to write an offer.
I'm trying.
Before the before the buyer can see the property, with the understanding that the sale is still going to be contingent upon inspection, but they just don't want people writing offers sight unseen, it sounds like.
I could comment on that.
Sure.
I sold over half of my listings during the pandemic so far virtually. So I gave my seller the option. You can utilize the photos and the video and have the offers made. And then the person whose offer is accepted will move forward like normal with inspections, et cetera. And it was a win. I mean, we still had multiple offers above asking price. One house that was a next gen house, we only got full price instead of above. She works with COVID patients, so it was another reason for us to limit people coming into the house. But we did really well with the price that we got. And so I think it may be dependent upon what price bracket you are and expectations of buyers. But if you're dealing with maybe first time buyer price range, I had no glitches. It was wonderful. And it was a great experience for my sellers. The buyers got in ASAP. They were happy. Only one didn't go through. And we had told them originally, look, it's a unique custom home. The living areas are large. The bedrooms are a little bit small. So if you need big bedrooms, this won't work. They wrote an offer and then they complained about the bedroom size. I didn't know it was like multi-generation adults in different bedrooms. So they canceled immediately. We had multiple offers, popped somebody else in. So it was really, really smooth, really smooth. To do that when I have a buyer, like if it's an investment property, my investors tend to like to see the property before making an offer. But during the pandemic, we are in difficult and different times.
True. The pandemic does throw a spin on that, depending on
where
you live. But I will tell you, I do see it as pretty common to, you know, want someone to see the property before they write it, you know, an investment property for sure, because you got to disturb some tenants sometimes. So then it's real common. High-end price stuff, they don't want looky-loos. Like a lot of times, you know, you get these people in multi-million dollar houses that don't, there's some people that just want to go, you know, make a weekend of touring those types of beautiful homes with no real intention of buying them, which is mind-boggling to me, but those people do exist. I think my mother would be one of those people if she knew that that was an option for her. They're just HGTV fanatics that just want to look at houses all the time. It doesn't cost you any money. So they want to kind of weed those out in those higher price points. So they say, hey, we're not going to, we also don't want you just tying up property. So don't write an offer, take 10 days to get in here and look at it and then decide you don't want it. You got to show us you want it. Hustle, get in it right now. Make sure it looks good to you before we pull it off the market for 10 days.
You know what? I think this is one of the blessings of COVID. I'm not on video because we're having our lunch now. This is one of the blessings of COVID, is that hopefully this will stay this way, that people, that looky-loos will get weeded out, winnowed out, because it's a nightmare. You know, when you have I work high-end listings, and when you've got all these people who just want to get decorating ideas and play real estate for the day, and I've got a seller who's anxious and saying, you know, what did they think? You know, and, you know, it's another fine line because you have to vet them so hard. And then they act, and then the agents for the buyers get kind of ticked at you. Like, you know, well, what are they looking for? Well, whatever it is you have, you know, it's that whole thing. They want to see everything, you know, and I'm not interested in their tour day. You know, I got other things to do. So, I'm hoping that this stays this way, that they have to show before they get to see a listing, on all of my listings, these are the rules. Drive by it first. Then you have to send me all your financials. You can mark their name on, you know, whatever you got to do, but I got to see them. And then in some cases, we might even contact their lender. And, you know, then all the other stuff I do. And then they can go see the house. But this whole thing where you're right, where we're going to play real estate for the day, that needs to end.
Yeah, you're right. Forever. COVID is doing a good job of ending it. You know what else is doing a good job of ending it is just the historically low inventory. When you have such high buyer demand and such low seller inventory, I mean, all the negotiating power is with the sellers right now. So they can kind of set the market anytime, any way they want to. So you literally can say, you got to drive by the house first. You have to honk your horn 3 times, You have to roll down your window. You know what I mean? You have to leave a gift on the sidewalk. Like all of them, you know, you can put them through any rigmarole you want to right now. And that's because if you're a buyer, quite frankly, you are in a different social class than home sellers are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so you Brian, are,
go ahead.
Also, you know, we with the virtual tours, and one of the great things that COVID's done again as well with the virtual tours, we won't on our listings, we don't want you to come in the house until you've at least looked at the virtual tour.
There you go.
Have you looked at the virtual tour? No. Well, then how do you know you really want to see the house? Are you
there
just
there? You go. That's great.
Against the wall, you know.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. That's great too. It's one more layer. It's one more layer. Yeah, and it saves one more person going into a house. Yeah, I like that. I like that. And that's what Tom said. Why not do a recorded walkthrough for your seller with the permission of the seller? It's kind of the same idea. It's that virtual tour where we can get that in there up front and alleviate. And to me, if I'm a buyer, if I'm Tom, like we go back to why we're writing this escalation clause in the first place, the more you can show them that you've done all these things, you know what I mean? To get that offer accepted up front. Hey, my guys have already been through it. They're cool with it. You know what I mean? Like that just shows me as a listing agent, I'm much more comfortable.
I've actually had a bad experience on two separate occasions just recently where the people that did not see it made offers. We had multiple offers on a listing. They don't even look at it. They just send out the offers, get the offer accepted. Then they go look at it. And it's like, no, I don't like it, and cancel. We had one where I lost out on it. It was a $1.2 million home. We just put it back on the market simply because the husband came out and looked. The wife never saw it. Finally, the wife came in a week later. She saw it and said, no, you know, it's just not for me. And so they wound up canceling on us. It's like, and it's funny because I saw everybody out at the house. I met the buyer and everybody. But because of all the masks, I didn't know who the buyer was and who the seller was and what happened. Or who the buyer, you know, which buyer was
right,
with.
Right.
But in some cases, I don't want to take an offer if they haven't seen the property.
I agree 100%. I was just giving the seller perspective before just pandemic, but I agree. If a buyer has the opportunity, if I'm a listing agent and we don't have any restriction on showing, I want them to see that house because I've had too many negative experiences otherwise.
Right. Yeah. So Angela, I hope that helps because this is an issue and it's an issue that, you know, with your client that their job does not allow them to see it through normal viewing hours. We're going to have to find a way in this market. And that's tough. I mean, he's going to have to ask, your client's going to have to talk to his boss and try to get some time. That's the market.
I even did the virtual tour with my own phone.
That's great.
You know, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did that myself. You know, but this guy is so married to his job, but it's like, okay, so I get it. You're dedicated to your job, but are you dedicated to getting a home for your family?
Right. That's what he's weighing. It's job versus shelter. It's a tough one.
And poor Jody's been having to listen to this since October.
Yeah.
She's like, divorce this guy.
Saint Jody. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, and that is the issue. That is tough, you know, with that job. But trying to get him to say, hey, man, I mean, just start asking for time off for, you know, an hour early each day and let's get you out there.
My new idea was just to get him to give me two dedicated days, you know, that we can just go see a bunch of places, because it's not like I'm chasing after him anymore. He's coming back to me.
Oh, you got a clinger.
You know what I think would be really good for this right now is you just got to find him that killer property and say, this is it. This is the one. And then get his butt out there. And if he doesn't, then he's just too slow and not real.
Or he was abusing his wife.
Yeah, or he's appeasing his wife and just looking to make her happy.
Yeah.
At but some point, it goes
find him the killer house. It has absolutely everything he wants, so that he can't say anything about it. It doesn't have this. It doesn't have that. And get him to go out and look at it.
Yeah, because we have all the paperwork. He's pre-approved. He's got the funds. He has a down payment. I mean, we've gone out several times to look at places, and I think he just is scared to make that move. That's what it's coming down to in my brain.
He might be emotionally scared to make the move, and he might be just not motivated enough for the change.
Yeah, you have to get in and find out exactly what his
hot buttons are.
Yeah, because there's something else going on here. Because
it's not a priority.
My mother used to always say, men will do the things they want to do if they want to do them bad enough.
Yeah, so there's something missing that you don't know about. There's some priority that is taking over this home search.
I agree. There's a motivation issue there, Angela, because he can get it done if he really wants to.
Yeah.
We got to tap into that.
I appreciate all that.
Yeah, a deep, deep needs analysis. Like that's usually when you have a new buyer consultation appointment where you get back in front of them one way or the other, and you dig deep into the why behind the move. What happens if they do move? What happens if they don't move? You know, what happens if they stay put in their current house for 5 years? You know, really get them to play that out in their mind so they remember why they wanted to move in the first place and kind of re-motivate themselves. All you do is kind of ask those questions to help them self-discover that motivation again. Kind of crucial there, because it sounds like you got someone that just doesn't want it bad enough, you know, who's putting excuses in the way is what it sounds like to me. So anyway, yeah, good.
Jody's already told me that like 14 times.
Yeah, Jody knows she's talking about. She's probably listening to her. Well, good stuff, guys. Great question, Tom. Thank you for that, man. As usual, that's a really good one. I would consider the escalation clause. That's the one thing it sounds like you're not using. You might want to start getting some practice at using it and seeing if that helps. I think you all should. If you haven't done one before, hell, if nothing else, let's learn how to use one and get it out there and see what happens. Start playing some Dr. Frankenstein with real estate and using it. So, because it does work, and it has worked for me from the buyer's perspective. So I can testify to that for sure. So, all right, guys, well done. Welcome back. Happy New Year. Wonderful to have you all back again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Trainer Podcast, sponsored by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. For more information about real estate coaching or to watch Brian's training videos, check out therealestatetrainer.com or find us on social media. And remember, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they're available.